I'm Frank Vaughn. It's July 20th, 2026. I don't have a lot of time today, but I thought I would wade in again and try and stir up some controversy just by dispelling popular concepts. The clickbait. There's lots of it. It's not just YouTube, it's Twitter as well. They monetize clicks, and I just want to talk right here. This is Unacceptable Nook. Now, admittedly, he's not a premium subscriber, so he's not going to make much money off this. But the fact is, a tweet with about 2,000 interactions and retweets, depending on how many verified users retweet it, you can make maybe 10 or 20 bucks off this thing. And that's the problem, is that whether it's YouTube, or whether it's Twitter, or it's some other social media platform, clickbait makes the money. I view it as picking up pennies in front of freight trains, because you have to mislead your audience all the time. That's what all these thumbnails are doing, is they're misleading everybody and trying to get you to click, instead of just being straight up and done about it all. At any rate, that's too big a subject for today, but this GIF, which now has... It's not a GIF, it's a short video, but it has 3,000 likes or thereabouts, and it shows the fires starting up north. And the allegation is that this was all done by arson, this was all done by plan, it's all coordinated, and it's the big evil government or the eco terrorists that are doing it. Now, there's a few things that you can see right out the gate with this. We're actually going to go through the comment section, because there's some poor soul in the comment section who really just wants to be analytical and get to the bottom of what's really happening here. And it's the hero's journey of... I don't even know if you can call it the hero's journey. It's kind of like Cersei walking down the street getting tomatoes thrown at her, if Cersei was somebody who was just trying to sort out objective truth from open theorizing. But you can see the fires spawn up. You can see the smoke plumes. And the allegation is that this was all done on purpose and that lightning couldn't have possibly done it. The problem is, having experienced the beginnings of a forest fire myself, it takes a long time for them to show up on satellite imagery that is this high up. Like, look how high up we are. We're looking at hundreds of thousands, millions actually, maybe tens of millions of acres in this one little capture that you can probably barely see because most of you are on cell phones. So these smoke plumes take a while to come up, but you can actually see at the beginning of the video, there's a bunch of clouds clearing out. There was a squall line that went through, and the poor person, this guy Tepri, I don't know if you can see this guy, lightning from thunderstorms usually strikes along squall lines in Canada, so yes, it is not only coincidental, but the expected behavior. We have records of fires starting in columns or lines going back 200 years. The allegation is that the lines are too straight. You can't have fires start in a straight line like that organically, even though we can see the clouds exiting the frame at the very beginning that would have caused the squall line. And Tepri, for his part, is simply trying to analyze it and get analytical about it so that the point can be proven. By the time the lightning strikes the ground and kicks off a fire, it doesn't just go boom! And thousands of acres are on fire. The lightning strikes one little spot, one little tiny spot, usually a tree. And then it takes an hour, 2 hours for that tree to fully start combusting and for the ground around it to start combusting. 4 or 5 hours later, you might have a fire that is maybe 25 by 25 feet in a radius, maybe 40 by 40. It takes a long time for it to get rolling. It's not going to show up on satellite imagery like this. These smoke plumes that you're seeing are going to show up probably 24 hours after the initial fires are started by the squall line. The other problem is, if you were to bother looking at a map of Northern Ontario, you would understand that there is no infrastructure in most of the places these fires are started, these particular fires. It's not to say that arson doesn't exist. It's not to say that government spraying programs don't exacerbate problems. It's not to say that I suppose space lasers couldn't start the fires. I just don't think you need space lasers to explain it when you have squall lines and you have lightning that explains it really effectively. And when you have the cyclic nature of the forest, 60, 70, 80 years of growth and then fire to regenerate the forest. It's designed around it. Whole ecosystems bloom in the wake of fires. This is not a new phenomenon. I don't know. People say, my 30 years, I've never seen anything like it. Or my 50 years, I've never seen anything like it. It's not enough of a perspective, as I said in my previous video. There is no infrastructure where these fires start in second. I mean, there's so many points here that I can make just by watching the video. It's not a perfectly straight line, for one thing. You're so high up, and these fires occur. It looks, I guess, roughly straight, but even to my eye at this height, it's not straight at all. It occurs over hundreds of kilometers. There's variance in the line, and there's no infrastructure. In order to coordinate, because that's the allegation. The allegation is the fires are coordinated and they all started at the same time and it must be caused by humans. A squall line could easily explain it, but this is what people are running with and this is the popular narrative. People are loving this stuff. In order to coordinate this, you would have to have people helicoptered in because there's no roads. There's no hunting trails. There might be some animal trails, but you'd have to hike for days and days and days on foot to get there. I don't even think you could do it by helicopter. To be honest with you, there's not enough airstrips. The effective range of even a Black Hawk helicopter is about 180 miles because you have to fly out 180 miles and then fly back. Every helicopter is going to have a different range. They have to land. They can't be refueled in the air. It's just, it's so stupid. And then to have all the fires start at the exact same time, you would have to have communications or you would have to know when each individual that's either hiking into the bush to start a fire in a very remote spot when you could just start a fire along the side of the road, you'd have to have all of them in their locations ahead of time and then somehow coordinate it. My point being, if everybody was using watches set to the same time zone, you still wouldn't, and they were out of communication with each other, you still would not be able to predict when those individual units of eco terrorists would arrive on location at each of these fires. So you could not use just watch time to coordinate the spontaneous, you couldn't coordinate the fire starting just by watch alone. You'd have to have radio communication. Well, where are you getting radio communication from? Satellites? Okay, so you got to have satellite communications for your eco terrorists that are hiking into these remote locations and hiking 600 miles, 1,000 miles, in the middle of the buggiest season we've ever experienced. I mean, I've never seen bugs like it. There's people in Saskatchewan. Summer, like spring didn't even show up until the end of May, basically. And people are already saying, bring on winter. I've had enough of summer. That's a pretty sad state of affairs. The North has been pounded this year, and now we got bugs like nothing anybody's ever seen. I've never seen anything like it in my life. So these eco-terrorists are hiking through the bush, dealing with black flies, horse flies, mosquitoes, ticks, everything you can imagine, wildlife, all to start fires they could have easily started by the highway. Or you can remove the helicopters, you can remove the hiking, you can remove all of these factors, and you can just look at radar data and realize that this clip has been selectively edited to remove the squall line that likely started the fires in the first place. And then there's people who say, there's never been fires like this before. It's so stupid. So just, I know this is grok, okay? But when it comes to looking up historical events, AI is pretty good. It's remembering everything you ever talked to it about. It's developing a profile on you. If you order it to delete those things, it doesn't anymore. I'm not sitting here and trying to defend Grok or its actions or its biases. You know, the other day, this is actually really interesting. Somebody was trying to use Grok. Jeff Everly, actually, will probably address him a little bit in this because, you know, he's very critical of Iran, is incapable of criticism of Israel. But he was trying to use Grok to disprove me, and Grok kept handing him his backside. But in one instance, Grok supported what he said because Grok has a bias. Grok has a U.S.-Israel foreign policy bias built into it. It's just the way it is. If you push back on it, to Grok's credit, especially in private, if you push back, it will correct itself. I've done it multiple times. But it was interesting because Grok supported him, and then I asked appropriate questions, and Grok corrected itself. But then Grok proceeded, unprompted, to start debating me, which I've never seen happen before. So Grok actually engaged me in a pushback. So that was interesting. because I was approaching Grok's bias, but put that aside for a minute. The dark day of May 19th, 1780, darkened New England's skies by noon from smoke of massive Ontario wildfires. Tree ring confirmed drought year, plus fog and clouds. Candles were lit by midday. Many feared Judgment Day had arrived. In the 1819s, Dark Sunday, November 7th, New Brunswick, Eastern Canada, brought similar unexplained darkening and mild panic, likely smoke or atmospheric conditions. 1881, September 6th, Yellow Day, saw saffron skies and 90% sunlight loss over New England from Michigan to Ontario. Fire smoke, candles again needed. These events show how large Canadian wildfire plume smoke can be this far south, matching patterns of clustered ignitions. I also seen some retardation that it was a, I don't know if I can actually find it really quick. If I go through my replies, maybe I can find where somebody said, it doesn't matter. He was talking about, this is the difference between Americans and Canadians. Americans look at a problem and, you know, we think, how can we solve it? And Canadians just throw up their arms and give up. We have a much larger country than the United States and we have a much lower population, as I covered in my previous video. It's just a ridiculous allegation that it's even close to similar or the same, especially when we've removed, as a result of the evolving nature of our society, 90% of the commercial activity that used to occupy our forest and incentivize taking care of the forest and having fire watches and doing all of these things. And even at that, we still had wildfires in the past. I am getting so distracted. The bottom line is that you can look up historical examples in regular intervals going back hundreds of years where this exact phenomena occurs before we had eco-terrorist nut jobs, which we do have. I'm not saying they don't exist. I'm saying that the eco-terrorist nut jobs do not have to be invoked to explain the sky darkening because of forest fires. This is pretty easily explained by natural causes. And in particular, in this case, it's beyond repute. There is no way. We're talking about, people are online making copy about Antifa terrorists and all this stuff being responsible for fires. Have you seen the average Antifa member, what they look like? The most energy they consume in a day is piercing their nose again or dyeing their hair. We're talking about Triggly Puffs. We're talking about not your best physical examples and specimens of people who are in worse shape than I am. And you want me to, you want me to believe that they are capable of hiking hundreds and thousands of miles into the bush and coordinating a massive eco-terrorist campaign? Like, it's just, I don't even need to explain it any further, but this is where people are. This is what they're talking about. Based on a selectively edited video, and people just run with this stuff. And meanwhile, like, first, like, you just have to look at it and think. It's just like the flat earth thing. You just have to look at the sky and look at the sun and the stars and the moon and just think. You don't need advanced instrumentation. You can just look at it all and go, flat earth doesn't work. Of all the things I know that flat earth doesn't work. I don't know everything about the universe, but the round earth model explains all of the observable phenomena that we see, whereas the flat earth model doesn't explain anything. It's very few things that you can know for sure. One of the things I know for sure, just based on observation, is that the earth ain't flat. And you watch in the comments section, there's going to be a flat earther that gets all triggered about that. It's bizarre to me that we swim in information. It's bizarre to me that we live in a time when you have satellite data at your fingertips, some of it right up to date. You don't even have to pay for it. We have the ability to just throw into a chat box of AI, give me historical examples of sky darkening fires going back 400 years, and it will just spit the answer out to you. And yet people just propagate nonsense all day long. You know, I used to think 10, 15 years ago it was bad when we populated the internet, which was capable of holding all of human knowledge with nothing but cat memes. I wish we could go back to that because it's never been easier to cure ignorance. And yet people are so resistant to it. So that a post like this can actually propagate. Another thing that I noted, it's wild to me, because now the right, so this started when I said Trump's biggest lie is that the war is about nuclear weapons. Before he bombed Iran at Israel's command, Iran agreed to give up, to give it all up under American inspectors. He bombed them anyway. Today, he told that lie over the bodies of two more dead U.S. soldiers, and it's shameful because it is. Occupant 9 started invoking Nazis. The Nazis. I said, ignoring the perspective of the Iranians won't make it less valid. The same mistakes were made in Vietnam. And what makes America the masters of the whole planet? These are two separate questions. Why does America get to dictate how the world lives? I'm interested in how we live here in North America. I'm interested in what we let in, what we don't let in, what we tolerate, what we don't tolerate. I'm very interested in that. But I believe that Indians, for example, should be allowed to live how they choose in India. I believe that Iranians should be allowed to live how they choose in Iran. I keep being told that the Iranians hate the Ayatollah. But universally, everybody's talking about Iranian expats that fled Iran after the very popular revolution who were very close to the Shah and their descendants. Of course, they hate the Ayatollahs. The Ayatollah came along and overthrew them popularly because of all the bad things the Shah was doing. And none of that, not a word of it, seeks to whitewash or justify any of the actions of the Iranian government. It's just a statement of what is. It was a popular revolution. And again, I find it interesting that we are invoking Nazis now. This is a person on the right who supports Trump is invoking Nazis to try and slap me down. That the implication is that I would be sympathetic to Hitler too, which is just, this is what the right is now. This is the stuff the left used to do, which I brought that up. And I also said the Nazis had a perspective too. Islam's perspective is war until we submit to Islam. In their perspective, to be masters of the whole planet. Should America just absorb every IRGC attack for 47 years? This 47 years invocation, this 47 year boogeyman. I ask, what branch of Islam are you speaking of? Because there is, broadly speaking, Shia and Sunni, but there's all kinds of different divergent branches. They're not all the same. I guarantee this individual has no concept of any of the differences between them. And now it's Trump is invoking Nazis to prove a point. You keep invoking my 47 years. And I ask, who has killed more, American machinations killing Iranians or the other way around? It's not even close. America is not morally superior. America has been responsible for millions of deaths in the Middle East in the last 30 years alone. We don't have to go all the way back to 1979. You just go back to 1991 and start counting forward. American foreign policy is responsible for far more death of brown people than the Iranians ever could be. And indeed, it was the Americans who armed the Iraqis to fight the Iranians in the war in the 1980s that killed hundreds of thousands of Iranians. So there's a lot more blood on American hands than there ever is on Iranian hands. And it's just, I just hate the propaganda. I hate the lies. It's not a defense of Islam. It's not a defense of anything. It's a statement of what is. And it blows my mind. And here we are. The Nazis loved the big bad. It's just, why are we invoking Nazis? It just seems so lazy to me. So, which brings me to Jeff Everly, which, you know, I don't want to get into all of what went on because I think Grok handed him his backside more than enough. He kept trying to, like, first off, you should never use AI as the arbiter of truth, which is what Jeff Everly does. He brings Grok into a conversation to try and prove his point. You can't use AI that way because AI is only as smart as you are. And if the only intellectual level you can bring to the conversation is to outsource your thinking to AI and to outsource your decision-making to AI, you're already making a huge mistake. But he tries and he fails to do so. But I just want to talk about this one thing. And this is where, like, he knows somewhere in this conversation, I didn't even finish off with Tepri. I'm sorry I'm all over the place. I just don't have a lot of time to plan this out right now. Tepri actually just went through the conversation about the fires and just asked for references so that he could then, because I believe what he said was that he's an insurance adjuster and he has to figure these things out analytically and actually prove them. And he was attacked and slandered just for trying to prove the existence of the squall line that started the fires. The easiest Occam's razor explanation for the entire thing for all the reasons I set out. And nobody saw the conversation. I did. Like, you see, there's like 19 views here. I read the whole thing. And at the end of it, I said to him, you know, for what it's worth, man, I read that and I appreciate everything you're trying to do. He's just trying to be analytical. We need more people that are just trying to be analytical. Now, Jeff Eveli will never criticize the state of Israel. Never. He's fine with all the body bags that the Israelis are filling. He's fine with the ethnic cleansing of Gaza and Lebanon. He won't talk about it. He doesn't have the courage to talk about it. He had courage on the battlefield, but he doesn't have courage in politics. He talks about Takaya and how the Islamists can lie. And I told him, the Islamists cannot lie to their own people. The fatwa that was issued by the Ayatollah that declared that they were not going to pursue nuclear weapons was directed at the Shia community. And the Iranians have never detonated a nuke to this point. They may soon. If they can, they might. They have every incentive to now. But the day before the bombing began, the Omani mediator, who the United States agreed to, said that the Iranians were willing to give all of it up, to downblend the enriched uranium and to bring American inspectors in, and they bombed them anyway. It's a war of aggression. The Americans are in the wrong, folks. Whether you love Iran or not, that's not the point. They kept their word. They signed the JCPOA, whether you like the JCPOA or not. Most people don't even know what was in the JCPOA. It was very technical, very advanced. And it did have a sunset clause, but it would have been renegotiated. It would have established a relationship and trust that would have been the basis moving forward for a civilian nuclear program, which the Iranians are perfectly entitled to, as signatories on the non-proliferation treaty, which the Israelis are not. The Israelis have nukes. The Iranians don't. The Israelis haven't signed the non-proliferation treaty. The Iranians have. The Israelis have proliferated nuclear weapons around the world to third-party nations. The Iranians have not. It's just what is. I don't know. I just don't know how people can exist in a world where they don't acknowledge facts. I hate it. I lose sleep at night because of the heaps of bullshit that people fling every single day. It bothers me. It's probably the reason I do this in the first place. It's just to rail against the dying of the light of truth. At any rate, he knows about Takaya, but he doesn't know where it comes from. And I asked him this, and he ignored the question. I said, do you realize what Orthodox Talmudic Jews believe? Do you realize they have the same ability, if they want to lie to the world in order to advance their religious cause? I had a conversation with an Orthodox Jew, year and a half ago, where we went over all this in a private conversation. And it sticks out in my mind. And how, in his view, the Islamic faith is nothing but some kind of pygmy offshoot of Judaism, and they just ripped off all the best aspects of Judaism and slapped Muhammad on top of it. That was his opinion. But Talmudic Jews have the same ability to lie to the rest of the world in order to advance their cause. And I'm telling you, they're murdering people in the West Bank. It's not just Gaza. They're murdering Christians. They're burning down churches. They're chasing people out of their homes. And I don't know how the Jeff Evelys of the world can just shrug their shoulders at it. It's really weak, Jeff. It's weak on the part of everybody who does it. I'm not a weak man. I don't care if you like it or not. I'm going to talk about it. The Israelis are fundamentally in the wrong right now in so many regards. And they should be checked. They should be sanctioned. Not Russia, not the Iranians. If you're going to sanction Russia and you're going to sanction the Iranians, you should be sanctioning the Israelis heavy. But we know why that won't happen. The merger of the militaries is nigh. We've talked about that in previous videos. He says, I do not accept, and I just want to talk about this one thing before I sign off. I do not accept the multiple erroneous presuppositions, he's using big words to try and get around the point, that underlie your position that most Iranians support the IRGC. They just murdered over 40K. It's now 40K. This was 20K. It was 10K. It was 37K. Laura Loomer has it at 100,000. Everybody's got their own number. Most of them are rounding up by leagues. And there's no doubt that it happened. But it was an insurrection, okay? Think about if you were the Americans and the Iranians were funding an insurrection against your government. The CIA and Mossad have now admitted that they were behind the organic revolution. If it was happening in the United States, what do you think the United States would do? If there were literally people shooting at the White House, what do you think the United States would do? It answers itself. You know, and I know. Now, you can pretend that you don't know, but you know what would happen. So two foreign intelligence agencies openly admit to arming these organic protests. And a lot of people got shot. According to one of the I covered in a previous video, I can't remember the name off the top of my head, but it's an Iranian human rights group that is not exactly friendly to the Iranian government. They put the number at 7,000, which is devastating enough. Why do we got to do the number inflation? 7K dead is enough. Those people were counting on U.S. support to come in, and the U.S. dilly-dallied, and they died. And they died at the hands of the Iranian regime. But he says they just murdered over 40K of their own citizens, and Iranians would... Iranians the world over. He made fun of me for misspelling a word on my phone, and then he goes on to make a mistake himself. Overdid the Trump dance in celebration of the elimination of Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. You're talking about Iranian expats. You're talking about Iranians that aren't living in Iran. You're talking about people who descend from those who fled after the Iranian Revolution and the Shah was overthrown. I'm not interested in what they think in terms of assessing what the Iranian people who live there think. The opinions of 100,000 or 150,000 people marching in Toronto don't matter as much to me as the same millions, not the same millions, as a different set of millions who are marching in the street of Tehran and the various cities around Iran during the recent Ayatollah's funeral. That's what matters to me, the opinions on the ground in Iran. So this is like a misnomer, that most Iranians support the IRGC, and then he talks about people that aren't in Iran. The country's never been more united, so he can disagree with that. He has to, because that's what supports his narrative. He can't acknowledge the reality that's staring him in the face. He's probably not even looking, to be honest with you, because if he saw it, it'd be really inconvenient. The cognitive dissonance would be hard to ignore. And then this other one is really bizarre, because I've made the comparison that it is fundamentally the same now that people are not understanding the Iranian perspective when it comes to this conflict. Doesn't matter if you agree. That's not what it's about. It's about understanding how they see this war. To the Iranians, to the Shia, and to many Persians who live in Iran, this is an existential war. This is Israel and the United States trying to destroy them and everything they are. That's how they see it. Whether it's true or not, doesn't matter. That's how they see it. And I said it's fundamentally this misunderstanding is why we don't understand the resolve, why the president could come out days ago and say, I thought they hated the Ayatollah. I can't believe there's so many people in the streets. And then Laura Loomer has to go out there and lie to everybody saying it was all AI. It wasn't. Huge gatherings of support. Iran is united. But he says he doesn't agree with that the American military was defeated by the North Vietnamese military and or the Viet Cong. At this point, I started typing a tweet and I'm like, I can't even take you seriously anymore. Because the Americans had their asses handed to them by the Vietnamese, not just the North Vietnamese, but also by the South. They were not loved because they were killing Vietnamese. They were killing millions of them by any count. But the Vietnamese seen the war through their perspective. It was an extension of 1,000 years of conflict to try and win their independence from everybody. China, France, then the United States last, then China again. They would have fought everybody to the last drop of blood because to them it was fundamentally a war of independence. Now the Americans saw it as an extension of the Cold War, which it wasn't to the Vietnamese, which is why they fought so doggedly and they beat the U.S. Army. The idea that the Americans weren't defeated, they were betrayed by their own side, says Jeff, and sabotaged from within. Are you high? The Vietnamese hated the American presence. There were some elites and some generals and some very sick people that were aligned with the United States. But they didn't. I don't even know. I mean, this is elementary stuff. I used to smoke pot and skip school and go to the library and read about the Vietnam War. Even as a stoner in my youth, I had a better understanding of the Vietnam conflict than is displayed in this tweet. It blows my mind. Now, you don't have to believe me. You, the audience, or Jeff, if you ever watch this, you don't have to believe me. You can go and get yourself a documentary. It's called The Fog of War. And that documentary centers around the life and times of one man named Robert McNamara. Now, he was the Secretary of Defense that was responsible, under Kennedy and then Johnson, for a lot of the escalations that happened in the Vietnam War. Listen to what he says. He says much the same that I'm saying, that nobody in the United States and in decision-making understood how the Vietnamese saw the war. And if they had, they would have never gone to war. Listen to the Secretary of Defense who ran the conflict, man. Don't listen to me. I'm just some pleb. I'll accept your premise that I don't know anything. Listen to someone else. Blows my mind. We're not understanding the Iranian perspective. We're not understanding it. And that's why we are now at day 140 or 150. And that's only if you score it from February 28th. If you roll back to the 12-day war, we're already over a year in. There's a reason to believe that this is already a year-long conflict. The Strait of Hormuz somehow did not get closed during the 12-day war and the after effects of it. It's closed now. I heard Donald Trump again this morning say that the Americans are in control of the Strait. It is absolute fantastical lies. More American soldiers are dead. More are injured. Military aircraft have been damaged, F-15s, Black Hawk helicopters. Is it worth it? There's no way to win here. It's 40-odd degrees in the Persian Gulf. What are you going to do? You're going to land 5,000 troops on Karg or Kashim or Bender Abbas? You know, you want to do another comparison. This will be the last one. But just take a look at Kashim Island. It's a bigger island than Okinawa. It took 190,000 American troops to invade successfully Okinawa. And they might be able to deploy 5,000. And of that 5,000 that could be deployed, they have to work shifts. It's not 5,000 24 hours a day. It's 1,000 to 2,000 in support crews that have to work in shifts. Invading an island bigger than Okinawa that has 150,000 people living on it. In 40-odd degree temperature, at the end of a logistics chain that makes North Saskatchewan look like a cakewalk because we're at the end of a supply chain. It takes longer to get stuff up here. That's the way it is. There's no world where the United States can beat the Iranians at this point. And neither can the Israelis. They don't have the manpower. There's this tiny little sliver nation that's not even the size of New Jersey with 9 million people and already having a manpower shortage. Their tanks and their APCs are useless against drones, against Hezbollah. That's why they're having such problems in Lebanon. I think there's a loose understanding that exists for now between the Israelis and the Iranians. It might not be spoken that the Iranians haven't hit Israel yet. And the Israelis have not yet joined the war with the United States, the renewed war against Iran. It's the stalemate, but I don't know how long that lasts. The Americans are fleeing their bases in the Middle East for a reason. It's because the Iranians can hit them. And they're fleeing and they're going to Ben Gurion. It's one of the only places left to them that is safe. Something like 100 refuelers that are parked at Ben Gurion, causing all kinds of trouble logistically for the civilian air traffic controllers who are trying to keep things somewhat normal. The Americans are just filling up all the empty space. And I just don't know how long it is until Iran fires a massive salvo at Ben-Gurion. The interceptors are depleted. The recent hits on Jordan that killed those soldiers, if you watch the video of those hits, you can see the Patriots firing. You can see the interceptor batteries firing. And you can see the Iranian missiles moving right past and making impacts on the ground. That's just the way it is. They're doing damage, and now they have better logistical capabilities because they're getting aid from the Chinese, and their alternative to the GPS system. I can't remember the name off the top of my head of what it's called, but they are able to hit with great precision better than at the start of the war. So Ben Gurion, if they really wanted to check the United States and their ability to bomb Iran, all they got to do is hit all of those refuelers that are parked there. And I don't know. I mean, at some point, I think they're going to do it. At some point, I think they have to. I think there's a calculation that has to be played out in their minds. They've already forced the United States to retreat from their bases in Bahrain and Kuwait and all around the region. There's people who will deny that. The Americans are getting their asses handed to them. They're doing a great job bombing empty buildings and old target sets, but they're losing everything. And if the argument is, as I've heard, that this is an attempt to check China, why are Chinese bulk carriers still able to get in and out of the Persian Gulf? Because the Americans have to let them for commercial reasons, for economic reasons. Like, it's so bad. It's so bad. And it can't get better with more bombs. But my fear is, my concern is that Trump he can't afford the political loss. The war is already deeply unpopular. Body bags are coming home. The Republicans are getting set up to get trounced in the fall elections. Like, it's a political and strategic disaster. And all politicians ever seem to know how to do in the United States when it comes to getting into conflicts that they can't win is they lie about it and they double down. Yeah, you know, it's weird to me. This will be my last point. It's really strange to me that so many people in the commentary space will react so viscerally and so angrily and with great insults and invective to the suggestion that the United States could possibly lose a war. That's what the United States does. They lose wars. Sure, they win some, but they lost in Vietnam. They certainly didn't win in Iraq, and they didn't win in Afghanistan. And now they've decided to go and play with the graveyard of empires, Persia. Forest fires in Iran. There it is. That's all the time I've got. I'll see you in the next one.